Welcome back to another powerful episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Nick Baer, founder and CEO of Baer Performance Nutrition. Every week, we bring you insightful stories, knowledge, and inspiration to help you reach your full potential in life, fitness, and business. If you enjoy the message we're promoting in this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you would leave a rating and review on the platform you are listening to. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes that embody the Go One More mindset. 10 years in business. This month, August 2022, officially kicks off our 10-year anniversary of BPN. And if you guys aren't familiar with the story, 10 years ago, 2012, I started Baer Performance Nutrition in my college apartment in Western Pennsylvania. And I was going to school studying nutrition. I was in the Army ROTC department. And I was living in this tiny apartment. It was like 1,100 square feet. I had five roommates plus a bonus roommate who occasionally slept on our couch. And it was above a bar on Philadelphia Street in Indiana, PA. That's where like the concept, that's where the quote unquote marketing, customer service, everything BPN related started 10 years ago. And looking back at the journey of these last 10 years has been honestly the most rewarding thing I could have ever experienced in a decade. I am so grateful for the people, the customers, you guys, like the support along this journey, because by no means could we have gotten to this point without you. If you are listening to this podcast, if you have supported BPN, if you've been on the website, if you have purchased a product, whether that's protein powder or strong greens or a t-shirt or a hat, if you've supported Go One More, the mission, the message and what we do, thank you. Because there's no way we could have got 10 years into this without you. And we are celebrating our 10-year anniversary. Well, at the time of recording, today is August 2nd. August 2nd's a big day because it's one day after my birthday. Yesterday, I turned 32 years old. And that was a big day because, one, we have officially kicked off the Baer 100 Challenge. So we have thousands of people participating in this with us. 100 push-ups every day for 100 days straight. Commit to the consistency. We onboarded 6 new employees yesterday. I turned 32 years old and my baby girl, Charlie Grace, is 2 weeks old. So it's an amazing, amazing time of life right now. But we are celebrating our 10-year anniversary here in Austin, Texas. So it is going to be the weekend of August 12th to the 15th. And here's what's going down. On August 13th, that's Saturday, we are having a pop-up shop downtown Austin. It's all day. In the morning, we are hosting an athletic event, athletic club, BPN Athletic Club. It's going to be a run downtown. And then from there, we're going into the pop-up shop that we've rented this really cool bungalow on the east side of Austin. And we're going to have a taco truck. We're going to have smoothies there. We're going to sell product. We're going to be offering a 15% off discount at the pop-up shop that Saturday in person. And then that Monday, August 15th, and you guys, you podcast listeners, you're hearing this firsthand. You're the first ones to hear this. August 15th, site-wide 15% off. And if you know anything about BPN, you know we are not a discount brand. We do one discount every single year, and that is Black Friday. We do Black Friday big every single year. It's our blowout sale. It's typically 20% off. Or we're adding a little extra spice to this year because it's our 10-year anniversary, August 15th, 15% off, site-wide, 24 hours only. The discount code is automatically applied to checkout, and we also are releasing a birthday cake-flavored whey protein. It is, just like all of our other flavors, absolutely delicious. It has sprinkles inside it. birthday cake whey. We've been working on this flavor for about 12 to 18 months to really lock it in. As you know, we take flavors very, very serious here at BPN because all the products we create, we want to consume and use on a daily basis. And if we're going to use and consume these products on a daily basis, we want them to taste really, really good. So birthday cake whey, it has sprinkles inside it. Just like all of our whey protein, it is informed protein certified and informed sports certified, which means it's tested for banned prohibited substances. And then informed protein certification means that it is tested for label claims and accuracy. So there's no amino spiking in there. If we say there's 25 grams of protein per scoop, you know it's been tested, verified, and certified. There's 25 grams of protein per scoop. No BS, no funny business, no amino spiking. It's the real deal. And the flavor is literally out of this world. 10-year anniversary. It only comes once, and we're doing it big. 24-hour sale online, August 15th. But what I want to talk about in this podcast episode, you know, 10 years of business, I've learned a lot through experience. Went to school for nutrition. I earned my bachelor's of science degree in nutrition. I also had a minor in business administration. I can pretty confidently say that everything I learned in college in regards to business administration has not applied to anything I've done in terms of building a business. I think if there's one thing I took away, one thing, it is the concept of opportunity cost. I remember the day, I remember where I was sitting, I remember my chair, I remember the auditorium I was sitting in, and it was for an economics class. And as you can imagine, that was some pretty dry shit. Like that was tough to get through. It was not as tough as sitting through my accounting classes. That was tough. But economics class was, let's just say I was consuming some caffeine before and during that class. But I remember the day where we learned about opportunity cost in terms of business and finances and the economy. And when you have opportunity cost, it means you might have multiple choices, and we'll break it down. You have two choices. If I choose choice A, it means I can't choose choice B. And if I choose choice B, I can't choose choice A. There's an opportunity cost associated with choosing to do or pursue or buy something, right? That's one thing I've applied to building a business, and I've learned. And that might be one of the only things I've learned through my business administration minor. But it's been learned through experience. And I've definitely learned more than 10 things. I could definitely have, and I might have a part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, so on and so forth. You know, follow on of this podcast, because over 10 years, I mean, if you start a business, after year one, you're like, holy crap, I learned a lot there. And then as you start growing and you start hiring more people and you start generating more revenue and you start building more systems and infrastructure and teams and the economy changes a little bit and the market and culture changes a little bit, you have to pivot and adapt. You learn more and more and more. And that cannot be taught in college or university. I'll tell you that much. That's taught by firsthand experience. Turning 32 years old yesterday, I feel like I've learned 100 years of experience in the last 10 years. And I wouldn't want it any other way. I really want. It's been amazing. But I've selected 10 things to talk about that I've learned over the last 10 years that is applicable to building a business, being an entrepreneur, being a solid employee or team member, or life as a whole. Building a business, the perspective you gain through that is applicable to a lot of things outside of building a business, building a family, being a father, being a husband, being a leader, being part of a community. It goes much further than that. But the first thing I want to talk about, the lesson I learned early on, is doubt is only dangerous when you start doubting yourself. And here's the thing, fear does not equal doubt. that's very easy to get confused by. It's okay to have fear. Like when you're going after anything ambitious, bold, difficult, challenging, there is fear. You know, last summer, around this time frame, last August, we were going to Leadville, Colorado to run 100 miles to the Rocky Mountains of Leadville at and above 10,000 feet of elevation. Was I a little nervous? Was I a little scared? Did I have some fear going into that run? Yes, I did. But did I doubt myself about crossing the finish line? Not for one second. Not for one second. This last marathon we did, the Buffalo New York Marathon, where we were going after a sub 250 marathon, was there fear? Was I anxious? Was I a little nervous towing the line in Buffalo, New York on May 29th, 2022? Fuck yeah. I was a little nervous, but did I doubt myself? No, I knew I was going to cross that finish line under 2 hours and 50 minutes. And where doubt stems from a lot of the times, where it is rooted, and I think this is even more applicable now as social media grows, we are more connected now than ever before. It's the process of comparing yourself to others. Comparison is the thief of joy. I really do believe that. And when you start comparing yourself to what other people are doing, or they're at least showing that they're doing, because sometimes the things that people are showing isn't what they're actually doing. When you start comparing yourself to that visual, that milestone, that moment in time, it can make you feel pretty shitty about yourself, what you've done or what you are doing, or where you're at right now. To compare yourself as a new business owner, as a new entrepreneur, day one, to compare what you're doing, how you're talking, how you're thinking, your skill set, your toolbox, to compare that to someone who's been in business 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years, it's not fair, first off, but it's not even, you can't compare. It's apples and oranges. Like when you're just getting started, to someone who's a veteran in the space, comparison is the thief of joy. And I told this story before, but I love this story because this is the prime example of people doubting you. And it's okay for people to doubt you. That's okay. Like people have doubted me my entire life and they still do. People can doubt you, but when that changes and you start buying into that doubt, that's when it's actually really dangerous. And this was shortly after I started BPN. And, you know, I started it in like the summer timeframe of 2012. And after starting it, I came back home to central Pennsylvania. I'm from this town called Palmyra, Pennsylvania, right next to Hershey, Pennsylvania, where they make, you know, the milk chocolate. And I was home for a weekend and me and my friends went down to 2nd Street in Harrisburg, which is the capital of PA, to go out to the bars and just hang out and meet up with old friends. And we walk into this bar and it was late. It was probably, you know, 12 p.m., midnight. And as we roll into this bar, we see some friends or some people that we knew that graduated in high school the year before us. And I knew of them. They knew of me, but we weren't close. We didn't hang out or anything. Small town, so you kind of know everyone. And as we roll into this bar, I see them in the corner. And they were a little lit up. They were obviously spending some time downtown. And they looked at me. They saw me walk in. And within a matter of like 5 to 10 minutes, I hear them chanting BPN from across the bar. And it's loud. Like this bar is loud. There's a lot going on. There's a shit show in there. And you can hear these guys just chanting BPN, BPN, BPN. And it wasn't like a cheering on like, we're proud of you, we're supporting you. It was a chant of BPN like, you're a fucking joke. And what you're building is embarrassing and what you're trying to do is useless and a waste of time. And here we are over here about to graduate college and get these big jobs and you're just going to fail. And I remember that thinking, wow, people don't want me to succeed. This is like the first time in my life I'm experiencing people not wanting me to succeed, like actually rooting against me. And I felt people rooting against me for the last 10 years since that moment on, to be honest. People will always be rooting against you when you're trying to do something difficult and challenging. And even though those guys in the corner of that bar doubted me, that doubt never crossed the line into my, you know, through my skin. It didn't go into my blood, into my veins, into my mind. Like, I never believed into that doubt. I was like, oh, well, that sucks. You guys don't want to support me, but I'm just going to keep doing my thing. And it's never been a chip on my shoulder. I want to make sure that's clear. There's never been a chip on my shoulder of, I'm going to prove you wrong. Watch me build this. It was just, you know, you can doubt me, but I'm not doubting myself. Like, I know what I want to build. I know kind of how I'm going to do it, at least from a visionary perspective. I have a lot to learn, but I'm all in. And I'm here for the long game. If it doesn't happen in a year, it's okay. Does it happen in 3 years? That's okay. If it doesn't happen in 5 years, that's okay. But I'm going to make this work. Another time, actually, that someone doubted me, I think I like this story even more. I was about to get out of the Army. You know, I spent 4 years active duty infantry stationed at Fort Hood. And I spent two of those years as an infantry platoon leader. Loved the job as a platoon leader in the infantry. Two whole years, which is a good length of time to be a PL. And as I was getting ready to transition out, I ended up working in the operations office. And that's typically the way it works as an officer is, you know, you do your role, whether you're a PL, a commander, you do your leadership time, then you move to the operations office to help out in the ops department of the battalion as you're processing out of either that unit or the military as a whole. And I was getting ready to transition out of the military, out of active duty service. And my boss at the time, who was a major, he walked up to me one of my last days in that office and he said, I think you're making a big mistake leaving the Army and you pursuing this job as an entrepreneur, as a business owner with BPN is a big mistake and you're going to fail. So I was like, okay, well, this guy obviously doesn't like me and he doubts me a lot and he's also probably rooting against me. That's all right. But then he pushed a little bit further. I said, it's all right, sir. Like, I'm gonna make this work. I have a plan. I have a vision. And I was very respectful. I was standing at position of attention as he kind of in my face and he's telling me how it's not going to work out. I'm making a big mistake and I'm going to be back shortly after. And at the time, BPN was probably doing right over seven figures in rep. We just crossed our $1 million annual revenue mark. And cash flow was a nightmare. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But he said, could you afford, I think he said Ferrari, could you afford a Ferrari right now? If your business is so successful to get out of the military, could you afford a Ferrari? And in my head, I'm like, hell no. I can barely afford our rent right now. But I looked at him very confidently. I said, sir, I could buy three right now. And he said nothing. And he walked away. And all my peers in that office, like they were trying so hard not to laugh because they knew I couldn't afford three Ferraris. I was like, shit, I can't afford like Chipotle later this afternoon. And I'll never forget that because he doubted everything in me. But it was okay. It didn't cross over into doubting myself. Doubt is only dangerous when you start doubting yourself. Allow people to doubt you. Comparison is the thief of freaking joy. But unless you start doubting yourself, it's not dangerous. The second thing I want to talk about that I learned in the last 10 years is paralysis by analysis. One of the recent books that I read and finished, and a lot of the BPN team members did here too, it's The No Rules Rule. And it's from the CEO and founder of Netflix. And one of the things he says in the book that I love is at Netflix, you lose your job for not placing enough bets. but losing on a bet isn't how you get fired. That's important because what happens for so many people is they are paralyzed by the analysis of what is so overwhelming that they never place the bet in the first place. You see, the thing about starting a business or a brand, as intimidating as it might be in the beginning, you have to realize that you are not ever going to learn all the lessons before you get started. You're not going to learn all the lessons within 10 years, but you're going to learn as you go. And that was something from the very beginning that I was okay with. I knew what I knew, but I also didn't know what I didn't know. And I was okay with that because where my kind of knowledge and skill set was very, very, very tiny. I thought that that minor in business administration was going to help me build the brand that I wanted. I had one marketing class that was led by this instructor who came out of the marketing industry. I believe he worked for an agency and then became a professor. And I learned some stuff about marketing from him, but still nothing that I really applied to building a business. And it's funny, I look back at high school and college, and there were people a lot smarter than me. I mean, majority of the people were a lot smarter than me. Some of my best friends were the top of our class in high school and college. Now, I was probably middle of the pack, where I was never like this stud student, but I also like got pretty decent grades. I didn't go to my number 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 pick in college. I ended up going to the Indiana University of Pennsylvania because I didn't get into any other colleges that I applied for. I wanted to go to College of Charleston in South Carolina. I wanted to go to University of South Carolina. I wanted to go to Penn State University. Didn't get into any of these. So last minute I had to say, well, shit, I guess I'll just go to IUP because I know I can get into there. And I did. But all of my friends growing up were very academically inclined and smart. And they were graduating 1, 2, 3 in the class. And watching them graduate, you know, top of the class and me not, I thought, well, I'm just not meant to do anything big and bold in life. I'm not. But what I quickly realized was they would overanalyze every decision they ever made after high school and college. I mean, overanalyze the smallest things. They would do their due diligence, yes, but they would do their due diligence times 20, asking a million questions before taking any step. I mean, if they had to buy a table, they would spend like 6 months researching where the table was from, how long it's going to last, how the wood was molded together, what kind of screws they were using, what's the warranty, is there a guarantee? Like, dude, I just want a table. Like, I'm going to go out and just buy a table within a matter of seconds. Now, that's like a very simplified analogy of overanalyzing everything, but there are people out there who will overanalyze everything, and through the process of overanalyzing, they become paralyzed and they can't make any decision at all. Make a decision. Make a bet. Like the CEO of Netflix says, you lose your job for not placing enough bets. But losing on a bet isn't how you get fired. Place the bet. When you place the bet, when you make the decision, you're going to learn from that. You either won or lost, you succeeded or failed. Either way, you're going to learn and grow from that. But if you constantly become paralyzed by the analysis of every decision, you're not going to do shit. You're not going to start that business. You're not going to start that weight loss journey. You're not going to start that training program. You're not going to start that new diet. You won't. You won't do anything. You're going to sit right there where you are, where you've always been, because you're overanalyzing every decision. Don't become paralyzed. It's a shitty place to live. The next is become a Swiss Army pocket knife. Now, I love this term. If you look at a Swiss Army pocket knife, now, I wasn't a Boy Scout growing up, but my uncle was. My uncle is one of the people in my life who influenced me to join the military. He was an infantry officer, battalion commander. He was Ranger qualified. I learned a lot through him. And he was also a Boy Scout, an Eagle Scout. And he would carry a Swiss Army pocket knife on him. And whenever we were hiking, he would pull that out and use it for something. And if you look at the Swiss Army pocket knife, the palm, if I'm looking at my hand, my palm is kind of the compartment of the knife that holds all the pieces. And then if I'm looking at my fingers, like maybe my pinky is the file. And then my ring finger is the scissors. And then my middle finger is the knife. And my index finger is the bottle opener. And then my thumb is a serrated knife. Like there's all these pieces of the Swiss Army pocket knife and they all have a specific use and purpose and function. Well, in the beginning of starting a business, especially a business that is bootstrapped like BPN, I took on a $20,000 loan as a college student in 2012, 10 years ago, knowing nothing about business, and quickly realized that $20,000 went away very quickly when I had to purchase inventory. And then I was left with no money left, but I had my Swiss Army pocket knife, which was me. And my pinky was customer service. My ring finger was fulfillment and operations. My middle finger was marketing and Facebook ads. My index finger was designer, graphics, labels, branding. And my thumb was owner, founder, admin, right? Like you have to do all these things. And I remember very vividly being in South Korea, 2016. Now I was in South Korea for a 9-month rotation with the US Army while I was a platoon leader. And this was 4 years after starting the business, 2012, 2013, 2014, each year was $20,000 in revenue. By the time I got to South Korea, the business was growing a little bit, like a little bit. But it was still just like me being at Swiss Army pocket knife. And because I was in South Korea, I left order fulfillment back in the States with my brother and my dad in my parents' house in Palmyra, Pennsylvania. And there was this bonus room above a garage that my parents built out. And that's where my brother would keep inventory and packing materials. And he'd pack the orders there, maybe one order a day, one order every other day. And he would drop that off at the post office the next morning. And I'm sitting in my barracks room in South Korea, and I was maintaining communications with manufacturers, the people who printed our labels, the banks, customers, doing customer service, building out the website, maintaining the quote-unquote marketing, which was me creating YouTube videos to build the brand organically. Because at this point, we still didn't do any paid advertising. We didn't do paid advertising until the following year, 2017. And I'm sitting in my barracks room in South Korea, and every order that would come in that day, I would sit in my room at night, my desk, and I'd write a thank you note. And I'd have this postcard, and I'd write this note, you know, "Dear John, thank you so much for placing your order of Blue Raspberry Flight and Lemonade Intraflight. I hope you enjoy it. If you do or you have any questions, please reach out to me at my email here. And this is my Instagram where you can send me a DM. We hope you enjoy it. Thanks for supporting the brand." And I'd sign my name and I'd pack up that letter and I put a stamp on it and I take it down to the post office on Camp Casey in South Korea. And I'd send it off that night to that customer. And for that entire 9-month rotation, everyone that placed an order, I would send thank you letters to. Because I quickly realized that if I needed and wanted to separate myself from my competition, who none of my competition viewed me as competition at the time. I was just a kid in South Korea trying to build a business while on active duty in the Army. I knew I had to make some sort of effort to separate myself from what other people are doing. And that thought process at the time was to make a more personalized connection. Be the Swiss Army pocket knife in the beginning. You have to do everything. Because what paralyzes so many people right when they get started is, well, this all comes together. they become paralyzed by the analysis of starting a business because they compare themselves to others. Like someone getting started will look at BPN, and BPN now has 40 full-time employees. We operate out of 50,000 square feet. We're pumping out 2,000 orders a day. And they're going to say, well, I don't have 40 full-time employees. I don't have 50,000 square feet. I'm not doing 2,000 orders. Yeah, but you also haven't been doing this for 10 years. Right? So like the instant paralysis by analysis through comparison, because you're not where you want to be. In the beginning, you got to be that Swiss Army pocket knife. You got to accept that, especially as a bootstrapped founder. You know, that's why I'm so proud of the title founder over CEO. And I've only realized that importance over the last 6 months. Over the last 6 months, I have become more proud of the title founder than CEO. You see, a CEO can be hired. I could step down as CEO right now and hire a CEO, but I'm always going to be the founder. The founder gets a business from thought, idea, concept to something that is actually physical, that generates revenue, that hires people, that builds teams. I am proud of the term founder, and I always will be. CEO is a great title. I love being a CEO. I love being a leader of teams and people and developing teams and people and growing systems and infrastructure. I do love and enjoy that job, but I am more proud of the term founder, especially a bootstrapped founder, not a funded founder. We didn't raise any capital to start BPN, a bootstrapped founder. That's where you learn a lot of the lessons, especially over 10 years. Now, my next lesson that I learned is a playoff of the previous one. The previous one, as we just talked about, become a Swiss Army pocket knife. This next one is know when not to be the Swiss Army pocket knife. There's a level of awareness you have to have that one will come with experience and skill. But if I try to be the Swiss Army pocket knife forever, I will never scale. We will never grow. If you don't hand off, like what that looks like is you get to a certain point where you have to be that Swiss Army pocket knife. You have to. But when you reach a certain threshold, you will hold your business back. I would have held BPN back if I would have tried to maintain all of those tools. So what that feels like is you reach a point where you have to rip off the knife and hand it to someone else. You delegate that responsibility. You rip off the file. You hand that to someone else. They are now the file. You rip off the scissors. They are now the scissors. You rip off the bottle opener. They are now the bottle opener. You rip off the serrated knife. They are now the serrated knife. You have to reach a point where you are not the Swiss Army pocket knife anymore. And that's what allows scalability. And there's no perfect answer to when that is. There's not a certain revenue mark where it makes sense. There's not a certain volume mark where it makes sense. You kind of just have to have that intuition and gut feel of, okay, based off our financials, based off of what I'm doing on a daily basis and the bandwidth that I have, based off of what is not getting done, it is now time to hire and grow this team. And every time I add someone new on the team, it's me taking responsibility away from someone else so they can focus on their area of genius. If you have someone who's working on things that isn't their area of genius, they are wasting time. They are wasting salary dollars. Everyone that works at BPN, I want them to maximize and fully juice all of their area of genius into what they are actively working on. That's my goal. But you have to have a gut feeling. You have to have you have to know through awareness, through financial responsibility, through transparency and insight into the business when it makes sense. There were a few things that have happened to me over the last couple of years where I realized I couldn't be the Swiss Army pocket knife anymore. And we operated very lean for a very long time, which worked out in our favor because it allowed us to keep reinvesting profits into the business. We didn't have to, and we still have never touched a line of credit. There's no debt on the business. We operate healthy. We have a strong EBITDA. But you can only do that if you're able to operate lean for an extended period of time. There is then the time when you flip the switch, you start delegating, hiring, and scaling and growing teams, people, payroll, systems, operations. And I've told the story before where I've misplaced $250,000. It was sitting in our Stripe account. And the story goes, because I have a few stories that I want to tell in regards to this, but what happened, this is a few years ago now. This is probably 2018, maybe 2019. We didn't have a CFO on staff at the time. Myself and my brother Preston were our quote unquote financial team in the business. We had an accountant that was doing our business taxes every year and some tax planning for us. But from a bookkeeping and day-to-day operation, financial responsibility, that was me and Preston. But we also were wearing multiple other hats at the same time because we weren't willing to not be the Swiss Army pocket knives. And I'm in our Stripe account one day because the way our Shopify account is set up is orders that are on subscription. So meaning you order something on subscription, it's delivered to your house, say every 30 days, like Strong Greens or Strong Reds or Strong Multivitamin. Those orders go through a separate checkout process because of the app that is integrated and it goes through a Stripe account. Stripe is the checkout process. And one day I'm in our Stripe account and I see the balance is $250,000. And I'm thinking, this can't be right. Like I got to reach out to customer support and see what's going on. So I hopped on chat and I'm logging to customer support through Stripe saying, hey, I'm in my account right now and I notice there's $250,000 in my account. I'm just trying to figure out if this is a glitch in your system or if there's something else going on. And they responded with, we tried to reach out to you months ago. We put your account on hold. So all the money that was coming in through those transactions is being held in this account and it's not being distributed to your bank account. And I was just like, I was speechless, just like I am right now. I was speechless. It was at a point in time in the business where we were operating lean. Cash flow was getting a little tight. I was getting a little nervous. And to come across $250,000 through a bootstrapped business when you're operating lean and you're not sleeping much because you're so stressed out because of the cash flow of the business, that was the greatest Christmas morning I could have ever experienced in my life. I will never forget that day. I remember the office I was sitting in. I remember the way I was facing. I remember turning over to my brother in the back office saying, I just came across $250,000. It was being held in our Stripe account and now it's being placed in our bank account. And we were just both like celebrating out of joy. Just like, yes! Because you feel like you are on the edge of losing everything in the beginning of starting a business. And to come across that is, it's winning the lottery. Literally winning the lottery. But that moment in time made me hire a CFO. And after that, I reached out to my accountant. I said, Dimitri, I'm about to lose my mind. I just misplaced $250,000. Please tell me I can and have to hire a CFO. And he said, absolutely, it's time. So we did that. Hiring a CFO as a business owner changes your life. It is one of the best hires you can ever make. Josh Holly is now our CFO here at BPN, and he crushes the game for us. And I sleep so much better at night knowing Josh is our CFO. There was another time where I'm sitting in my office, and I've never told this story, actually. I'm sitting in my office and people would stop by BPN HQ to purchase products every so often. We used to sell products out of the HQ. We don't anymore just because the foot traffic coming in and out of HQ was just too busy. And I'm sitting in my office and this police officer walks in our front door. This is also before we had key scanners to get in the doors. You could just walk into BPN HQ whenever you wanted. And this police officer walks in and I assumed he was a fan of the brand, watched our YouTube videos and was here to buy some product. So I came out full energy, like hand out for a handshake, just like, how you doing, sir? What can we help you with today? And he goes, are you Nick Bear? And I said, yes, sir. Yes, I am. Expecting him to say, big fan of the videos, you know, love the products. I'd love to come here and buy some stuff. I was ready to help this guy out. And he hands me these papers and he says, you're being served by the county. And my heart just about sank. And what ended up happening was, again, this is before we had a CFO and a legal team attached to BPN, is we were late on our business personal property taxes. Now, business personal property taxes are taxes you pay to the county, at least here in Central Texas, and you're paying taxes based off of literally the property that's in your business, like your desks, your computers, your shelving and racks. Like, you pay taxes on business personal property. And I didn't even know about business personal property until I was served by the county. So we were able to get that situated. And after that, it triggered me to, again, hand off some of my pieces of that Swiss Army pocket knife and bring on a legal team to handle all of our legal matters in a more appropriate, efficient, and effective manner. So those two lessons really play off each other. You need to become a Swiss Army pocket knife in the beginning, but you also need to know when not to be a Swiss Army pocket knife. I'd say of all the things I've learned, those are the two greatest. The next thing is to establish a North Star and fight to maintain the trajectory. This is something we go through on a regular revolving basis. And Trey, who's our VP of marketing, said this to me 2 days ago. He said, when there is no vision, the people will perish. When there's no vision, the people will perish. People do not have direction without vision. As leaders in a business, as a CEO, founder, a leader of now 40 employees, it is my responsibility, it's my job to establish and maintain that North Star, that vision. That North Star is, where are we heading? What does that look like? What are our goals in terms of revenue, impact, mission, employees, initiatives, sustainability, build out? Like, what is that North Star? Who does BPN want to be and who are we? And it's my job to maintain that, because what happens as you grow and you scale, because it's a lot easier when you're leaner and you have a smaller team. As your team builds, you add more people on, and especially people that have experience in skill sets and are smart and educated. People are going to join the team and they're going to want to make things happen. They're going to want to move the needle based off their experience, and they're going to want to lean into the business with full initiatives and grow and scale. And when you bring in too many people, and especially too many people too quickly, and they're implementing their thoughts, their ideas, their initiatives, their experience, what they've done at previous jobs, and they're projecting that on the business, that is great. But if there is no North Star, if there's no vision that is directed and maintained by the leader, the CEO of the business, well, you start working on everything. And when you're working on everything, you're not focused on one thing. Like right now at BPN, we have 5 key initiatives. Everything we do has to be focused on those 5 key initiatives. If it doesn't fit into those 5 key initiatives, we're not going to work on it, because it's really easy to chase all of these opportunities. Again, it goes back to the beginning of sitting in economics class and learning the power of opportunity cost. As you grow and as you scale, or when you just start a business, there are opportunities that are going to present themselves to you all the time. And it's really easy to say yes to all of them because they all look sexy. They all seem cool. They all seem like they're going to move the needle in the business. They might all help you grow, but if you try to do all of them, not one of them is going to help you grow. When it comes to vision, when it comes to your North Star, you have to say it loud and you have to say it often. We have a meeting every 2 weeks now where the only intent of this meeting, the end state of this meeting, is that me as leader and CEO of the business, it is me projecting my vision. It is making sure I say it loud and I say it often. This is where we're heading. This is who we are. This is what we're working on. Maintain that trajectory. Let's stay focused. It's steering that ship. Our company has gone through this time and time again. And the thing is, you have to recognize and realize that it's going to keep happening. As you grow, as you scale, as you keep bringing on more people, and you're trying and testing new things, you're going to naturally try to spread out way too thin. Go deeper on fewer things rather than shallow and then a lot of things. Establish a North Star and fight to maintain the trajectory. Again, when there is no vision, the people will perish. There's no direction. The next thing that I want to talk about that I learned is in regards to educating yourself on cash flow and the financial responsibility of the business. 2017 for us was a challenging, to say the least, a challenging year. It was the year that I got out of the military. It was our first seven-figure year in business, our first year doing over $1 million in revenue. It was organic. You know, up until this point, we didn't pay for any ads or we didn't run any paid advertising. It was all generated through word of mouth and social media and brand building and establishing an online community. And cash flow was a nightmare. And I've talked about this before, but you should really understand this as a product-based business. Inventory, cost of goods will suck up cash, especially if you are not an established business and you don't have terms with your producers, manufacturers, or partners. So what was happening in this year was we weren't big enough or we weren't established enough to get terms yet. Terms meaning that, say I place a production order for inventory. I place a production order for whey protein. If that manufacturer is like, here's BPN, they're a small company, they haven't spent that much money with us yet, and we haven't seen their financials, and I didn't want them to see my financials at the time, they're going to say, okay, well, BPN has to pay for all their inventory up front. If you have terms, you might not pay for any of your inventory until 30 days after you get it, maybe even 60 days after you get it, meaning 60 days after it lands in the warehouse, then you pay for the inventory. But in 2017, that wasn't the case. What would happen was we would place a production order for inventory and our PO lead times were 12 weeks. And when we placed that production order, it was 50% of the deposit down. And then when that order shipped, we would pay off the remaining 50%. So 100% of that inventory was paid off before we even received it. Now, this could work for an extended period of time. But when we started running out of inventory faster and faster, we had to start stacking production orders. So maybe there was a PO placed at 12 weeks, 10 weeks, 6 weeks, 2 weeks. Every time we placed a PO, that was 50% of that production order deposit down, meaning all of our cash was tied up in inventory that we didn't even have. That probably wasn't even running on the production line yet. And we thought that the health of our business was based off of our bank account. That was our biggest mistake. But again, you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes when you bootstrap and you just get started and you learn on the fly through your wins, losses, successes, and failures, that's just part of it. What I would challenge people to do before starting a business is get some advice from a financial advisor, an accountant, a business mentor. Learn about your options. Your options of a line of credit, financing, inventory. Someone creating, you know, a 13-week cash cycle so you know how long will cash last you based off of how fast you're turning inventory and you're selling through and you have to place production orders and what's your overhead. Help someone or have someone help you build out a financial model based off your business so you're not flying by your pants and just hoping. Hope and wish is a dangerous, dangerous thing. I mean, I remember the day that I got out of the Army, which was an amazing, amazing time. I got out of the Army and I was like, okay, now it's my full-time job to build this business. And literally, as I was walking out of Fort Hood and signing my papers, that relieved me to go on my leave as I was transitioning out, I got a call from my accountant saying, hey, you owe business taxes this year because the business is actually starting to make some money. At the time, I think our taxes were like $40,000, something like that. But to me, I was like, $40,000? That's like all of our money. How am I going to survive? But I didn't have a plan, right? There was no plan in place. I always just build, figure it out as we go. As a business owner, as an entrepreneur, this is where I messed up the most in the beginning. We got lucky in a sense that we made it through tough times, but not everyone does. Ask for help, reach out for help, find a mentor, find an advisor, build out a financial plan that sets you up for success so you know how much time you have left until you got nothing left. Again, we got lucky. And I look back at those years daily, reminiscing how lucky we got. The next thing that I learned is the concept of hire slow, fire fast. Now, a few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to sit down with the CEO of Gymshark, Ben Francis. And I've talked about this meeting on this podcast a few times so far, but I took a lot away from talking to Ben. And one of the things he talked about was a business is built off of three things. And you can evaluate your business, your organization, off these three things. If one of them is lacking, it is an opportunity to grow. If the business is not growing, you have to look at these three things. Product. Is your product good? If you have a good product, solid. That's like foundational business 101 of having an ability to grow and scale a healthy business. If your product sucks, scrap it, start over. Brand. Do you have a strong brand? Do people resonate with that brand? Is there a message and mission behind that brand? And three, people. If you have solid people, you can build a business. If you have not so solid people, it's going to be very, very difficult to build that business, to build that brand. I think of the last 10 years, especially the last couple of years as we've grown the team, and I've learned this in the military. As a platoon leader in the Army, having the opportunity to lead 40 soldiers and non-commissioned officers in an infantry platoon with my non-commissioned officers, I mean, working closely with my platoon sergeant, my squad leaders, my team leaders, people management is the most important thing that you can learn how to do in building a business, building an organization, building a brand. Are you going to do it right 100% of the time? No. But it is essential to build a business. You will not see a business succeed without proper people management. And the thing that you have to realize that is so important, and it's why I keep going back to hire slow, fire fast. We've really done our due diligence in terms of looking into who is the right person for this job based off of experience, based off of skill, based off of character, based off of culture fit. if someone has all the experience in the world and they are a stud at their job, but they're not a good culture fit, I refuse to hire that person. And the same thing goes, like if they're a great culture fit and they have the character, but they don't have the skill set or experience, again, unfortunately, I can't hire that person because it will weigh down the business. As you're scaling and growing a brand, you have to operate lean. Every job, every team member has to carry the weight that they are responsible for. But you can't hold people accountable without setting expectations. And that's one thing I've learned over time is you have to set realistic, feasible, achievable expectations in the beginning. Because if you don't, you can't hold someone accountable to anything. You know, over these last couple of years, we have had to let people go. Not many, but we've had to let people go. And it never gets easier having to fire someone. I've had to fire people from BPN who have been very, very close to me, even before they are employee here. It never gets easier, but it makes the hiring process that much better because you never want to fire someone. Like, you never hire with the intent of firing, but in the event that you have to, it is part of business. And why we say hire slow is because you do your due diligence. You make sure they're a culture fit. You make sure they have the character. Their values are aligned with BPN. You make sure they have experience. They have the skill set required to do the job. And you set the realistic expectations and hold them accountable. Hire slow, fire fast. The next is trust but verify. And a lot of these things become more important as you scale and as you grow. Trust but verify. Like, we used to do these things in the Army called layouts. If you spent any time in the military, you are definitely familiar with layouts. So the way it looks is, say, for example, we're going to the field. And we're going to the field for 2 weeks. And I'm taking my platoon to the field. So I give my platoon sergeant, who's my right-hand man as a platoon leader, the packing list for the field. We work together. All right, sergeant, this is what I think we're going to need for the field. You know, you have your magazines for your weapon. You have your canteens. You have your shovel. You have your tent. You have this and that. And there's a list. There's a packing list. And you would think it's pretty easy to follow. So we'd pass this packing list out and tell everyone, pack your ruck in accordance with this packing list. And make sure you double check your packing list. Now, it's really easy to trust. Hey, here is this piece of paper that says everything you need. I am trusting you to make sure that you put all this stuff in your pack because we're going to be gone for 2 weeks with no access to anything else. Make sure you have it. So what the squad leaders and team leaders would do then before going to the field is they have them lay out their entire ruck, pull everything out, and they would check their ruck in accordance with that packing list. And more times than we'd all would like to admit, a lot of people would forget things off that packing list. Trust people to do the job. Trust people to do it the right way. But also make sure you verify that they are. Now, it's really important to empower people, empower a team to take ownership of their job. When you verify if they're doing it correctly, that's not micromanaging. That's just assuring accountability that we are moving in the right direction with the right person and we're doing the job to a standard that is set and uphold. Trust without verification, that is just hope. And hope is a dangerous place to live. Now, we work with employees, we have team members, we have agencies, we got departments here at BPN. And when we put out a strategy and we put out a plan, we trust that it's going to get done. But we always verify that it is. I mean, we've worked with agencies in the past and we're working with agencies right now for different parts of the business, whether tech development, app development, product development, ads, advertising agencies. And it's really easy to trust that they are experts in the space and they're going to do the right job. But if we haven't verified their work on a regular basis, we'd be in a really tough spot. trust but verify every aspect of the business, or you are setting yourself up for failure. It's a dangerous place to live. The next is lead with context and not with control. You know, a lot of these things, now that we're getting towards the back half of it, a lot of these things, if not all of these things, have been learned in the military and then directly applied to building a business. If I look at our organization right now, 40 full-time employees, when I was a platoon leader, 40 full-time active duty soldiers and non-commissioned officers. It's pretty amazing how applicable it is. And it's funny, when I joined the Army and I branched infantry, people told me, don't go infantry. There are no applicable skills to the civilian sector through that experience in the Army. And I was like, oh shit, maybe you're right. When I go to the civilian sector, we're not worried about carrying rifles around and leading teams through battle drills to go fight a war. But in retrospect, you realize that the things you learn in the military, in leadership positions, in organizations, through standard operating procedures and systems, they are very applicable to building a business. And when I say lead with context and not with control, control is exhausting. It's controlling. It's exhausting for you as the leader. It's exhausting for your team. It's micromanagement. It limits growth. It limits creativity. It's just stuffy. Like control just, it kind of sucks. No one wants to be controlled. But being given context is empowerment and ownership, a handoff of ownership to do your job without control. In the Army, we used to give context through a task, condition, standard, and timeline. Okay, team, this is what I need you to do. Here's the task. Here are the conditions that you have to do that task. This is the standard. This is what it should look like when it is complete. Or these are the KPIs. This is the end state. This is the outcome. This is the result we're trying to achieve. And you have to do it within this timeline. By end of day, tomorrow, for example, this needs completed. Now, within that task, condition, standard, timeline, that's all context. There was never a, this is how you have to do it, step by step by step. There is no control. It was all context. It is ownership being handed over of, you get to operate within these parameters to achieve this end state. I've learned through building teams and departments that trying to control outcomes or processes, procedures, the result, it, like I said, it's exhausting for both parties, and you never will achieve what you've hoped for because you've limited the empowerment to the person doing the job. Lead with context, not with control. And the last thing I want to talk about that I've learned is growth is a choice, and it must be a choice. It is never by chance. Forcing growth is something I've been doing for the last decade, the last 10 years. It's pushing myself, pushing the team, pushing people to be uncomfortable. Because as soon as we reach a point of comfort, we are not trying to grow any longer. We are just living stagnant. Growth is uncomfortable. Growth brings growing pains. If you want to grow without growing pains, you really don't want to grow. People say all the time they want growth. They want to grow in their personal life. They want to grow in their business. They want to grow as a father, as a husband, as a mother, as a wife. If you say you actually want to grow, you have to be willing to invite in the growing pains. You don't get one without the other. I love the concept of forced growth. When we signed our warehouse lease for 2590 Oakmont Drive, Suite 420, Round Rock, Texas, 78665, 6,000 square feet of beauty, I was psyched, right? I was psyched. But we couldn't necessarily afford the spot at the time. What happened, though, is we signed that lease. And I don't know how the commercial real estate agent allowed us to sign that lease because, like I said, we couldn't afford it. We signed that lease. We moved in. And for me and my brother, it was, we have to grow the business because we have to pay rent here. Now, was that the smartest? No, probably not. But it was our technique at the time. When we moved into our second HQ, which was then 10,000 square feet, did we have to leave our first? Did we necessarily outgrow 6,000 square feet? No. But I knew that if we moved into 10,000 square feet, it would force us to grow into that space. It would make us work so much harder. It would challenge us to make more difficult decisions. It would make us and force us to live in the uncomfort even longer and even deeper. That's what it did. Like, growth is a choice. When I wake up in the morning, I'm choosing growth. I'm doing things that are uncomfortable because I know it's going to make me grow. It's doing the hard right over the easy wrong. Not just physically, but like having tough conversations with employees and team members, having tough conversations with your wife and your family, making tough, difficult decisions that might not be the best for the short term for certain people, but for the long term, it will help them, and trying to get them to understand that. These are the things that I've learned, just some of the things I've learned over the last 10 years. Like I said, there could be a part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 100 of the things that I've learned, and they all come with a story. And some of those stories end in a win, and some end in a loss, and some end happy, and some end sad. But I've learned through these experiences because they've been firsthand from a bootstrapped business 10 years ago. Growth is a choice. When I decided I was starting my business in 2012, that was a choice, and I knew I was going to grow through it. When I decided to join the Army before going to college and commission in 2013, I knew that was going to be difficult, but I knew I was going to grow through the experience. Things that I choose to do, I know will change me in terms of making me uncomfortable to a point of growth, not just physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, becoming a better leader, founder, CEO, business owner, father, and husband. These lessons are all applicable. So, thanks for tuning in, guys. 10 years of business, 10 years, 10 lessons. And I'll be sure to share more with you guys in the future. So thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Bear Performance Podcast. Please leave a rating and review on the platform you are listening to if you enjoyed it. It helps us to grow and reach more people with the intent of changing lives through the Go One More mindset. If you are ready to take your health and performance to the next level, head over to bpnsubs.com to take the first step.